Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, text 12. Ajina lila hasite shano lasad.
Ajina lila hasite shano lasad.
Rupanga samsuchita borya nugraham.
Rupanga samsuchita borya nugraham.
Ikshetya chintamayam enam ishvaram.
Ikshetya chintamayam enam ishvaram.
Yavan mano dharanaya. Ajina, very magnanimous. Lila, pastime. Asita, smiling. Ikshana, by glancing over. Ullasat, glowing. Rupanga, signals of the eyebrow. Samshujita, indicated. Bhuri, extensive. Anugraha, benediction. Iksheta, one must concentrate on. Chintamayam,
transcendental.
Enam,
this particular.
Ishvara,
the Supreme Lord.
Yavat,
as long as.
Mana,
the mind.
Dharanaya,
by meditation.
Avatishtate,
can be fixed.
Translation. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 12.5, it is said that the impersonalist undergoes a series of difficult programs on account of his impersonal meditation. But the devotee, due to the Lord's personal service, progresses very easily. Impersonal meditation is therefore a source of suffering for the impersonalist. Here, the devotee has an advantage over the impersonalist philosopher. The impersonalist is doubtful about the personal feature of the Lord, and therefore he always tries to meditate upon something which is not objective. For this reason, there is an authentic statement in the Bhagavatam regarding the positive concentration of the mind on the factual form of the Lord. The process of meditation recommended herein is bhakti yoga, or the process of devotional service after one is liberated from the material conditions. Jnana yoga is the process of liberation from the material conditions. After one is liberated from the conditions of material existence, in other words, when one is nivritta, as previously stated herein, or when one is free from all material necessities, one becomes qualified to discharge the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, bhakti yoga includes jnana yoga, or in other words, the process of devotional service simultaneously serves the purpose of jnana yoga. Liberation from material conditions is automatically achieved by the gradual development of pure devotional service. These effects of bhakti yoga are called anartha nivritti. Things which are artificially acquired gradually disappear along with the progress of bhakti yoga. Meditation on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. The first processional step must show its effect by anartha nivritti. The grossest type of anartha which binds the conditioned soul in material existence is sex desire. And this sex desire gradually develops in the union of the male and female. When the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. When all these are acquired, the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements, and the false sense of egoism, or the sense of myself and mine, becomes prominent. And the sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements, resembling the foam of the sea waves, which becomes very prominent at one time, and at the next moment vanishes as quickly as a cloud in the sky. The conditioned soul is encircled by such products, as well as products of sex desire. And therefore, bhakti yoga leads to gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely, profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire. And one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degree to which he has been freed from sex desire. The sex desire is diminished along with the various forms, along with its various forms, by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated.
It's a long purport, so stop there. Om Gana Chimanandasya, Gananjana, Shalabhya, Chakshurvaditamyena, Tasmarshi Kuranayama, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya,
Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasti Gaura. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Adina Lila, the Lord's magnanimous pastimes. Magnanimous means overgiving far beyond what the recipient deserves. Magnanimous means that you never expected such an overdose of benefit. And indeed, that is the whole process of bhakti yoga. You cannot conceive of what is in store for you. In the beginning, most of us approach bhakti because we want relief from material existence. We want our material problems to ease. And no doubt, simply by taking up the bhakti lifestyle, automatically you're less involved with material existence. But the true magnanimity of bhakti yoga goes far beyond mere relief from material existence. The true wealth that the bhakti process bestows is attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. And of course, that most magnanimous appearance of Krishna with the most magnanimous pastimes is Sri Chaitanya. Namo Mahabhananyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Sayama. Rupa Goswami certifies. You've never seen a more magnanimous manifestation of Krishna than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is freely giving love of Krishna, giving it away. Meanwhile, of course, we grumble that Krishna consciousness, the process is too difficult. We don't have enough time. We don't have enough willpower. All of our whinging is going on
Wow. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing the highest benediction. So, distributing it so freely and so easily. So we have to question ourselves. What's going on? What's wrong? Why is it that if the ocean of mercy is overflooding everywhere, why is it that I feel like I'm not making progress? I feel frustrated in my spiritual advancement. There must be some impediment in us. And this purport describes the main impediment. It describes that the conditioned soul is infected with a particular material desire, which is at the root of so many other material desires. The sex desire is not simply a physical phenomenon. The sex desire has so many corollaries. So in the purport we hear that when the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. Now, just think about that. Further aggravated? What's wrong with accumulating buildings? You know, real estate investment. Children. Friends, relatives, and wealth. Isn't that all part of life? Now we're hearing that when the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated. Now, that should make us think. What you ordinarily have to deal with is bad enough. You don't want to further aggravate it. And then we hear, when all these are acquired, the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements. And the false sense of egoism. So what is that false sense of egoism? We hear, the sense of myself and mine becomes prominent. So we have to look at ourselves and look at our existence and see how that's happening. How the sense of myself and mine takes over or increases or hopefully diminishes. Through the process of devotional service, that false ego gradually dissolves. Lord Kapila Dev in the third canto of Bhagavatam points out that just like the stomach digests food by dissolving it with the digestive acids. Similarly, bhakti yoga dissolves the subtle body. And it's that subtle body, of course, which contains the false ego, ahamkara. So that sense of myself and mine dissolves. Not your spiritual identity, but the false material identity that we have accumulated, which causes so much trouble. So once this false sense of egoism increases, the sense of myself and mine, when that becomes prominent, that's not the end. The sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements. So this is the empowerment that the Bhagavatam gives you. You can look at the whole world and its interactions and see how they are just expansions from gross sex desire. Whether it's politics, an election is coming up, social, altruistic, charity, some or other, it can all be traced back to sex desire. Just see how the Bhagavatam is educating you. Now, you may not be able to see that right now, but if you try to observe through the lens of the Bhagavatam, you'll start to understand. Remember that famous example where, from New York City, Srila Prabhupada was there for Ratha Yatra. So, that must have been 1976. So, one young sannyasi was sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada, and newly minted sannyasi, and in his mid-20s or so and so. And so he was sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada very staunchly, of his danda, in rapt attention, as one should be, focused on his divine grace. And then, just out of nowhere, it seems, Srila Prabhupada asked him, "Have you seen the New York women?" Young Sannyasi didn't know how to answer. Is this some kind of trap, or is this what do I say? Whatever I say, it'll come out. And Prabhupada prodded him again. "Have you seen the New York women?" Again, the Sannyasi didn't know. It's a young Sannyasi, he's trying to be staunch and how to answer that, Guru Maharaj is asking such a question. "Have you seen the New York women?" Still silence, just totally stymied. The Swami didn't know what to say. And Prabhupada went on, "Aren't they beautiful?" Now the young Swami was totally bewildered. Then Prabhupada began to elucidate. He said, "Look at all these skyscrapers. Look at all this commercial activity in Manhattan. Look at all the hustle and bustle. It's all going on because of the New York women." It's all because of it. So this is a very deep philosophical statement. Not simply philosophical in that we think it's abstract knowledge. This is spiritual realization coming from the Vaikuntha platform, from the spiritual world. Krishna's devotee is able to see through the labyrinth of Maya and get to the bottom line. So it's not some kind of sexist remark. "Oh, Srila Prabhupada had a thing about women." No. He's just pointing out man's susceptibility to that. That's all. He's pointing out the motivational factor in a man's existence. Mundane economists have sort of said the same thing, not so incisively. One famous economist said that the whole reason behind economic expansion is family life. Put a man in a family and he's got to earn money. Of course, that's breaking down these days because there's no family life anymore. The nuclear family is disappearing. So those in demoniac control of society have to find out other motivations to get people to go on slaving in consumer society. Because it's not so much family life for many persons anymore. Families are breaking apart, or they never form, and there's so much chaos going on. In any case, we can think, how deep does this effect of sex desire go? How expansive, comprehensive are the effects? We read that these effects, which the Bhagavatam considers unwanted engagements, resemble the foam of the sea waves, which becomes very prominent at one time, and in the next moment vanishes as quickly as a cloud in the sky. So just think about that. At one moment, the social, political, economic pressures of life seem so weighty. There's so much in your face. And the next minute they're gone. They come, they go, they come, they go. Matra sparsha stukantaya shitoshna sukadukada. Krishna tells you in Bhagavad Gita. Just like the winter and summer seasons come and go. Similarly, happiness and distress come and go. When happiness comes, we get so caught up in it. "I'm happy." Someone asks you, "How are you?" "Oh, I'm happy today. Last night I was happy." And when distress comes, we feel so down. "Oh, I got problems. Oh, nothing is working out." So Krishna advises you, don't be caught up in this coming and going of this foam on the sea waves.
One minute the foam looks very dominant, even looks very beautiful if the ocean's not polluted. And next minute, it's gone. How can we see life in this way? It seems impossible to our conditioned senses. It's very poetic to read, but to actually see in that way. How do you do that? But take into account that the Bhagavatam will train your vision. You are not simply reading the Bhagavatam like an ordinary book. By reading Bhagavatam, you are associating with Krishna, because Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. And that literary incarnation becomes more and more known to you by way of devotional service. We discussed that Wednesday. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Sama Sevayapipa. By rendering of the service to Krishna, you can understand Krishna. Bhaktyama Abhijanati. So a devotee is someone possessed by the desire to understand Krishna. Like a haunted person is possessed by a ghost. Our quest is how to understand Krishna more. That's the perfect use of our intelligence. That's the perfect contemplation for our mind. We should feel overwhelmed by the desire to understand Krishna. And that means we're overwhelmed by the desire to serve Krishna. Because the more we engage in Krishna's service, the more he will illuminate the core of our being with understanding of him. Shinvatam Sukhata Krishna Punya Shravanakit. By hearing about Krishna, the super soul activates purity in your heart, activates understanding of Krishna. The super soul in the heart is not idle, nor is the super soul in your heart alone. Paramatma is there with all his associates. Krishna, in any of his forms, in any of his expansions, is never alone. How can someone be the supreme enjoyer who's always alone? Enjoyment always means in the association of others. So Krishna shows that he is the supreme personality of Godhead by always having the best associates. He has the best friends. He has the best parents. He has the best servants. Whether his devotees are in awe and reverence, or they are in the sweetness of the Vrindavan, love of Krishna. Still, Krishna always has the best of all types. He takes the best from them. Not simply their official prayers, but he takes even what appears to be their disrespect. As described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when his friends, after wrestling with him, tell him, "You're not so great at all." Krishna relishes that. When his intimate lovers criticize him, Krishna relishes that, even more than the Vedic hymns of official praise. So in this way, you can judge the Supreme by his associates, just like you can judge any ordinary person by who's around that person. Who does that person hang out with, associate with? Similarly, you can understand Krishna's supremacy by looking at who's around him. Therefore, when you sing the praises of Krishna, you refer to his associates, Yashoda Nandana. He's the son of Mother Yashoda. Gokula Ranjana. He's the central attraction in Gokula. Krishna likes that better. He likes to be defined in terms of his associates. He likes to be defined in terms of the places where he gathers with his associates. In this way, you can see association is everything. Why would Krishna want to be alone? He is self-sufficient, but his having associates, which are actually his own energy,
increases his glories. But we're a little suspicious because we have problems with association. We have so many hopes when we establish relationships in the material world, with friendship, romantic relationships, family relationships. We have so much hope. And then, so often we're disappointed. Or if not completely disappointed, it's just that what we want to get from that relationship is not completely there. So this troubles us. Okay, I'm getting 50% from you. If we could just increase it to 75%, I'm not asking for much. And because you don't get that maximum amount you want, you get so frustrated, you get irritated, because you can't just dismiss the person. Because after all, the person is giving you 50%. But you just keep thinking, come on, why? Let's try to increase the percentage. Can't you see that it can be done? You get so irritated, agitated. So unconsciously, based on that experience over countless lifetimes, we think the Supreme must be alone, no hassles. And then we hear that Krishna is never alone. Even as the super soul in the heart, his Paramatma expansion, he has his associates. What to speak of Swayam Bhagavan. One of the glories of Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, is that he's always surrounded by loving associates. Krishna is showing you, why you try to compete with me, setting up shop in the material world? Who do you think you are? You think you're going to establish your own pleasure world with your own imitation pastimes? Your own group of cowherd boyfriends, your equivalent, your mates? Your own consorts? Your own family? So it's not, of course, that Krishna is saying, while living in the material world, never have a family, never have friends. But he's pointing out that every relationship in the material world is only valuable when it helps you make progress to the ultimate relationships. So therefore, in bhakti, we're not against family, we're not against friends, of course. But we know what the purpose of all the relationships is. And we judge our relationships by how they inspire us to come closer to Krishna so that we can revive our original relationship with Krishna. Everything a bhakti yogi does is focused on that point. How is this relationship helping me in devotional service? How is this relationship helping me to progress out of the material world? Therefore, we consider, what are the effects of this affliction, this disease known as sex desire? And then we start to understand how so many other complications arise from that basic disease. How our material affairs are based on that. Our accumulations. And then how our false ego increases. And even innocent-looking things like charity, philanthropy, efforts at political liberation, economic equality, we start to understand it's all based on sex desire. How do you understand it? You have to start thinking about these things. And then the super soul in your heart gives you that vision. You're not alone in your bhakti process. The Lord in the heart is watching. He's waiting to give you more. But sometimes we think that Krishna is lazy in our heart. When's he going to do something for me? But Krishna knows the perfect timing. The super soul knows just when to reveal more to you. That's actually a manifestation of love. Perfect timing. Knowing the exact moment to step in, the exact moment to reveal more. Of course, the pinnacle of that perfect timing is explained by Krishna to his intimate consorts.
in his most intimate pastime in Srimad Bhagavatam. They were almost accusing Krishna, why did you leave us at such a critical time? In the middle of the forest, in the middle of the night, with the most beautiful consorts in all of existence. Why did you leave? And then Krishna explained, he's the master of perfect timing. He knows how to appear and disappear in such a way that the love increases. Because Krishna is the supreme. The supreme means not simply creator, maintainer, destroyer. Now, that doesn't directly concern Krishna. But in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, he's showing that he is the supreme master of love. Suratanath, he's the master of romance. What we most desire for ourselves, that is Krishna's unlimited quality. So he explained to his intimate consorts, the gopis in Vrindavan, I know what I'm doing, in other words, I know how to love. I know the perfect way to stage situations. I know the perfect way to reciprocate. Krishna presented his expertise in loving affairs so dramatically and powerfully that he said, and what is the ultimate way that I increase the love? I leave. What kind of lover is this? Who says, your service is so extraordinary, I cannot possibly repay you in the lifetime of Brahma. So in other words, therefore I left. So you can experience love and separation. We often explain, if you're in a relationship with someone in the material world, they tell you, oh, I cannot repay you for your service, therefore I'm leaving. What is this nonsense? You stay here, serve my mind and senses if you feel so indebted. Well, that is the way of material existence. Krishna, he wanted to give his dearest devotees the most exquisitely ecstatic experience. That's why he left. Because by his leaving, they actually have him even more. That is the mystery of Vrindavan. Krishna's so-called leaving produces his presence even more. The love of Krishna in separation. We're in the second canto of Bhagavatam. The first and second canto are considered the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Krishna Leela, particularly Rasa Leela, that is the tenth canto, the smiling face of the Lord. You know that. When we approach the deity for darshan, we start at the feet and raise our vision upward. In fact, you approach any superior personality in that way. Whether Krishna's devotee or the deity. As you look at the deity, you start to realize, I can stare at Shri Radha Krishna all I want. We've explained so many times. The deity is the only personality that you can stare at and the person doesn't feel irked or irritated while you're staring. You can make that test. Select your best friend, your husband or your wife, whoever, and just stare at that person. Watch how they feel. He starts laughing. You stop. Everything is bad. You just go do something. Just get out of here. You try it. Make that test. It can be your dear most associate, but still they just can't stand you staring at them all the time. It's like, what's going on in your mind? What are you up to? You got a problem or something? Go do something. But you can come before the deity and stare and stare and stare to your heart's delight. And the more you stare at the deity, the more purified you become.
These verses here in the second chapter, the second canto, are teaching you about meditation on the super soul. You've got to step upward, as we explained Wednesday, from meditation on the Virat Rupa, the universal form, to meditation on the Lord in the heart. Because the Bhagavatam is comprehensive. It explains everything and then offers prescriptions for precise periods of existence. But it explains the whole gamut, the whole range of possibilities of spiritual process. So therefore, Paramatma realization is part of that comprehensive picture. By hearing about meditation on the universal form, by hearing about meditation on the Paramatma, the Supersoul of the heart, you start to realize that meditation is not a whimsical process. It's not that I want to meditate, and so you pick out whatever you want to meditate on, make something up. Meditation has to be authorized. This is the point Srila Prabhupada emphasized again and again, even before the huge yoga boom in the West began. There was a little bit going on in the 70s and 80s, but by the time the 90s came around, the yoga boom had really exploded all over the world. In the USA, it's estimated that there are 18 million yoga practitioners. When I was, where was I recently? Oh, I was in the airport in China. And you know how most airports, they have, if you're in a Christian country, they may have a prayer room at the airport. In a Muslim country, like in Kuala Lumpur, they'll have a Muslim prayer room. But what do they have in China? Meditation and yoga room. That's how acceptable yoga has become. It's a household thing now. But no one understands what is the goal of yoga. They don't understand that yoga has to be an authorized process. The whole purpose of yoga is to bring about your concentration on the Supreme Absolute Truth. Jana vastitatadgasena manasapatyantiyam yogina. So, by hearing about the Virat Root meditation on universal form, by hearing about meditation on the super soul and the heart, we start to assimilate the point. Meditation has to be authorized. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is giving you the complete picture of your meditation possibilities. And the Bhagavatam is also dealing with those unwanted meditations in the heart. And we find out about the sex desire and all its manifestations. Another point in the purport is that bhakti yoga leads to gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire, and one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. Sometimes in reading these purports, we think, will I be left with anything? Okay, I get rid of the gross sex desire. Now, I got to worry about profit, adoration, and distinction? Come on, doesn't everyone want it? What's wrong with that? You know, you want to feel like you've gained something in your life, materially. And you want to feel that others appreciate and adore you. And you want to feel different from others. Sometimes devotees even become disgruntled in the association of devotees because they don't feel like they're getting enough of this profit, adoration, and distinction. Certainly we want to show our appreciation of devotees, the service they do. At the same time, we have to be careful. What is our motivation? We have to be careful of this manifestation of sex desire. I want gain. I want to feel I've profited from my stay in this world. I want to feel that others relish me. They adore me. And I want to feel different. I want my distinction to be Surprisingly, this can really affect those living in the association of devotees especially. After a while, sometimes they feel a little unnoticed, a little undistinctive. They don't feel distinct enough. What can I do so I can stand out amongst the crowd of devotees more? And of course, adoration always helps, we think. For example, I was talking with my godbrother, Badahari, a wonderful kirtan leader, and we were discussing how particularly musicians, artists, not exclusively, but particularly, they are overwhelmed with a desire for recognition. Every time they play a note or make a painting, they want to know, did you see that? Did you hear that? So I was telling him how there was one studio musician who was recognized as one of the best studio musicians in the world by those in the know, by those in the industry, but the general public never knew because this person's name was never listed on any recordings because it was against the practice of the recording company to list their studio musicians. But all the musicians knew, he's the best, he's the best. So this musician, even though he was recognized by his peers as the best, because the public didn't know about him, he felt so miserable. And once he was in Hollywood in a restaurant, eating with one of his other musician associates, and a song started playing in the restaurant with the lead guitar music that he had played. In other words, he had recorded on that song 20 years before, and the song had become world famous. And so there he was sitting down to eat, and then he hears his guitar playing from 20 years ago on this top hit, and no one knows it's him. If you're a musician, you know how that's agony. No one knows it's him. He felt so overwhelmed that he was starting to call the waiter over. Do you hear that? Do you hear that? That's me. That's me. And then he just caught himself in frustration and just put his head on the table and cried. But no one knows. What's the use? No one knows. So I was telling that to Badahari Prabhu. So every once in a while he would joke after making a kirtan. He said, you know, what I really need is more recognition. That's what I really need. Because that was the conclusion of the other musicians relaying this story about this famous guitar player who no one knew about because he's just a studio musician. They told the interviewer very seriously, oh, he was so depressed. He practically committed suicide. You know, he just needed recognition. Like, that's the therapy for everything. So, Badahari often joked after a kirtan, you know, I just need recognition. Now, we may not be an artist, we may not be a musician, but still we can see that the desire for recognition really motivates us in every ashram. And we can understand from this purport where the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction comes from, what it's based on. When we think about what it's based on, it's very horrifying. So then we pray to Krishna that we can render devotional service simply for Krishna's pleasure. It may seem impossible. When will I ever get to that point? But remember, it's our natural situation. Sometimes when you have a disease, you think, I'll never get over this. I'll never get well. Sometimes that's true about material diseases. You don't get over them until you give up the body. But the Bhagavatam is giving you the hope, scientifically based hope, that you can get over the disease of material existence. Therefore, we hear that the sex desire is diminished along with its various forms by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated. So in other words, we're not talking about the material accumulation of knowledge in an academic way. We're talking about that knowledge that is part of the bhakti process. We have so much knowledge, you spend your lifetime trying to get to the depths of Srila Prabhupada's books, you'll never reach the bottom. And as you engage in Krishna's service by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, your spiritual realization increases. And the super soul helps with that, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Teshamaham, Tesham Evanakam Parta, Aham Agana Jam Tamaha, Nashyami Atma Bhavasto, Gana Deepena Bhashvata. Out of compassion for you, I, the super soul in the heart, will turn on the torchlight of knowledge and dispel the darkness of ignorance. Out of compassion for you. So it's not that the super soul in the heart is just watching and letting you just rot. No, the super soul is always trying to turn our head in his direction. But we're just not aware of that. As you become more spiritually advanced, you see how much you are dependent on Krishna's direction, both as the super soul in the heart and the super soul without. The spiritual master represents the super soul without. Based on their teamwork, you make spiritual advancement. The beauty of the super soul. Of course, although it is unimaginable and inconceivable, doesn't compare to the beauty of Swayam Bhagavan. Yet, the beauty of the super soul is so enthralling that when we read these verses, the glowing glancing of his smiling face. And yesterday we heard about his decorations. If this is the super soul, you start to think, what is the beauty of Shyam Sundar? So in this way, the Bhagavatam is building your ability to appreciate beauty. You start with appreciating the beauty of the universal form, the beauty of nature. That's a great step forward for so many people today. Rather than destroying the environment, they should appreciate the environment as the body of the Virat Rup, the body of the Absolute Truth. That would be a great step forward, instead of destroying their own habitat. Then the Bhagavatam takes you to the beauty of the super soul. And when you finally reach the 10th canto, you have the beauty of Shyam Sundar. So in this way, you get the complete picture of beauty. And as you're getting that complete picture of beauty, you lose your attachment for the false beauty of the material world. That is the magic of Srimad Bhagavatam. The so-called mysticism of bhakti yoga is that you feel spiritually nourished while losing your hunger pangs for material enjoyment. We have to give the process its chance to work, though. So what if it's a whole lifetime? Do we have anything better to do with our life? I've explained so many times that if you start working for a corporation when you're 21 and you spend 40 years with that corporation, so that by the time you're 61, they put you on the board or make you a senior vice president or something, how do you feel? It was all worth it. 40 years was nothing. I am on top now. But if we say, my dear Prabhus, spend 40 years chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, serving Krishna. 40 years, is that how long I have to wait? This is the problem. We are predisposed toward material enjoyment,
and whatever struggle is necessary to attain material joy. We're predisposed to it. I have a grandmother who was a very pious Christian lady, and she married her husband when she was 18, and she stayed with him for over 40 years until they're in their early 60s, but very pious, devout life from the Christian point of view. But when he was 62 and she was around the same age, he died of cancer. So then she spent 7 years alone, and when she was 69, out of the blue appeared a teenage associate from 50 years ago. And he told her, you know, when you were 18, I wanted to marry you. But, you know, you married this other person, and, you know, what could I do? You know, we're Christians, we don't, you know, we respect the marriage institution, so I just faded away for 50 years. But I was always thinking, if I had my chance, if somehow or other I could be with you. Now you're 69, and due to the laws of nature, you know, your husband has expired 7 years ago. Now it's my time. Waited almost 50 years. And so, of course, what did the people in general say? Oh, this is very nice. he was honest and virtuous. He dropped out of the picture when she married someone else, but then 50 years later, he reappeared with the same desire. Oh, this is life. This is what it's all about. The old-fashioned fidelity, the old-fashioned dedication. So everyone applauded. So they got married when they were 69, and they stayed together until they expired into their 90s. Stayed together. It was like over 20 years. So people applaud that. Well done, well done. But when you look at spending 40 years in bhakti to learn how to chant properly, oh, too much. Because what's haunting us in the bottom of our heart is, well, I'm spending 40 years trying to hear the holy name, I'm missing out on a lot of material enjoyment. My life is passing. My youth is going away. What happens if I'm still in my 50s and 60s and still want to enjoy? What's going to happen? Like so many persons in India will say, Swamiji, bhakti, spiritual life, is for when you are in your 60s and 70s. That is the time. When you are young, you make money. Then, when you have lots of money in your 60s and 70s, then you say, Jai Sri Krishna. The fear is there. I'm going to miss out dedicating decades to trying to please Krishna. It's too long a time. But if we say, 40 years to become on the board? Oh, that's very good. Right? You tell your relatives, wherever they are, India, Australia, after 40 years I became on the board. Very good. We are so proud of you. just see how we're prejudiced against spending time to please Krishna. That's because of the infection of Rajagun. We're so passionate in a hidden way about material enjoyment. And we're afraid to let go of material enjoyment because progress in bhakti seems to just take forever. But remember, Krishna is the master of timing, and he shows you that again and again. You always get more than you ever thought you were going to get. That is the nature of Adina Lila, the munificent, magnanimous pastimes, especially because we're dealing with Sri Caitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. So let us not be biased against patience in bhakti, especially knowing our cheating propensity, how predisposed we are to patience for material gain, patience for material profit, adoration, and distinction. Krishna knows our disease, so we should support Krishna in his gradual program to rectify us. And you'll get confirmation along the way, without a doubt. The Lord in the heart is helping. The external representation of the Supersoul is helping. The assembly of devotees is helping. Let us start to see all the help that we have available to us and take advantage in that way. All right, are there any questions? Yes? Jnana-dīpena paśyatāna.
So when we see how the Vedanta become discouraged and despondent,
when do you see what?
When, whatever Krishna has just asked to see.
Oh, when he reveals the monsters in the dark lagoon. You know what a lagoon is? It's like a part of a body of water that's very deep and often polluted, overgrown with vegetation. So we have monsters in that deep lagoon of our heart. So Krishna is doing us a favor by letting us see. Seeing the enemy is half the way to victory. So be thankful that you can see what's going on in the heart, those anarthas, because not seeing them causes you to enter so many unwanted, unfavorable situations, motivated by false ego. But as you start to see the monsters in the heart, the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, you save yourself so much trouble. So be thankful when Krishna shows those things. Just like a good doctor can show you, here's your disease, here's how to get rid of it. What do you say? Oh, no, doctor, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. Why are you showing me this? A good doctor doesn't reveal anything about the disease. I don't want to see it. No, you want to know what's going on. What's wrong with me? I was talking to one of my sannyasi guy brothers yesterday, and he was describing how he became very sick in a Russian-speaking country. And so the devotees arranged the top medical care available in that country, which was quite impressive. If you have political connections or financial connections, you'll get the best in the country. If you don't, well... So he got the best medical attention. But he said, you know, it's all in Russian, and even though I had a translator, the translator can only, you know, the doctor is just saying, like, it's like this, it's like that, you have to do this, you have to do that, here's a diagnosis, what's going on and on. The translator, you know, can only translate like 20% of what the doctor is saying. So the Maharaj couldn't grasp the whole picture. So he was telling me, no more foreign language doctors. And a doctor who speaks English, then I can get the whole picture of what's going on, what I should do. Because he wants to know. My body's engaged in Krishna's service. It's my duty to preserve the body as best as one can until it's obvious that this body is finished. So I need to know what's going on. I want to hear. What do I have to do? I have to change my diet, I have to exercise, do this, do that. I want to know. What to do, what not to do. So that's the way we are with medical treatment. So why can't we be that way with Krishna? I want to know, what's my problem? Let me see. And Krishna says, out of compassion for you, I'll show you. But it's not just negative that Krishna shows you the bad things. He turns on that light of knowledge, Jnana-dīpena,
And you can also see that you are his servant. And you see what's interfering with your being Krishna's servant.
Okay. Yes.
Describe that weakness in the heart? Due to conditioning, what happens?
What happens is that we don't trust Krishna.
And what shows that? What's the evidence of that? Because I'm having to push myself a bit. Maybe Krishna's ignoring me, he's forsaken me. Have you ever worked in the material world? If you ever had a job, you'd understand more about how material life is a struggle. And you wouldn't complain about a little bit of pushing, self-motivation necessary to engage in Krishna's service. So in one sense, you're very fortunate. You don't have to work. You can focus on your spiritual advancement, your family, and Krishna consciousness. But if we don't see the great opportunity we have, we can treat everything in a familiar way. Oh, Krishna's forsaken me. I don't have to work. I have all the facility I need. Krishna's forsaken me. Why am I struggling? So sometimes it's not only that we need some transcendental knowledge, we also need some practicality. Count your blessings. Others will look at a situation and say, what's this devotee complaining about? It's a symptom of material life to always feel some inadequacy, some lack, and then blame it on someone. Who's the best person to blame besides your husband? The best person to blame is Krishna. He hasn't done this, and he did that. So you have to watch out for that tendency. It's a barrier to pure love. All right. Yes, last question.
You mentioned that profit adoration distinction is required in the devotee's life.
Is what?
Profit adoration and distinction is required in the devotee's life also.
Is what? It's present, you're saying? Is what?
It's required, you mentioned.
Required? I don't know if I said that. I said that appreciation of devotees is very important. But at the same time, we shouldn't have a lust for appreciation. We want appreciation for other devotees, but we don't want appreciation for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do we understand?
What does Lord Chaitanya say? Amanina manadena. I don't want any profit, adoration, and distinction for myself, but for others, I want to glorify them. So we want to appreciate other devotees. I always say that whatever devotional activity you're doing, know that right now, somewhere in the ISKCON world at least, someone is doing that service better. Right at this very moment. That's a humbling thought. That's a wonderful advantage of being in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. No matter how great you think you're doing, just see how I'm leading kirtan. Just see how I'm speaking. Just see my managemental preaching expertise. You should know, somewhere in this world, at that very moment, someone's doing better than you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.